This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Bingeworthy, a podcast dedicated to telling you which of the many dozens of streaming shows being thrown at you each week and month are worth your time and attention, hosted by myself, Mike D'Angelo. And today I get to talk to you about my absolute favorite show on any platform right now, and that is FX and Hulu's Shogun. The series is based on the beloved book of the same name and is set in 17th century Japan. Basically, it follows multiple characters in a struggle for power after a British vessel is found marooned in a small fishing village, and that sets the stage for political unrest and potential war. The show stars Hiroyuki Sanada, Cosmo Jarvis, Anna Sawai, and more. Today, we have two interviews that I did for the show. First, you're going to hear my conversation with the writer-showrunners Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo, followed by my conversation with the legendary Japanese actor Hiroyuki Sanada, who plays the central figure of the series, Lord Yoshi Torunaga. Hiroyuki Sanada, you may know from his role as Scorpion in the recent Mortal Kombat film, John Wick 4, Bullet Train, he was in Avengers Endgame, one of my personal favorites, Sunshine, The Last Samurai, and so much more. Like I said, Shogun is my favorite show of 2024 so far. Yes, I know it's early, but I've seen a bunch of shows that are coming up as well in the next couple months, and Shogun remains top of mind for me. I finished this a month and a half, 2 months ago, so it's just stuck with me. The writing, the performances, the costumes and sets, they're all so perfect and immersive and enthralling. I know a lot of people who were unaware of the book or the 80s miniseries were afraid that this might be kind of a white savior story where, you know, a white guy comes to a foreign land, learns their ways, and, you know, kind of leads them to glory and westernization. But the British actor, played wonderfully by Cosmo Jarvis, is no savior in this tale. He's very much a political pawn and a tool that people are either threatened by or want to exploit and utilize to their own ends. It's very complex. I've seen, like I said, all 10 episodes. It's such a perfect single series arc. I can't recommend it enough. The first half of the series is available to stream on Hulu, with new episodes dropping Tuesdays through April 23rd. Before we get to my chat with Justin Marks, Rachel Kondo, and Hiroyuki Sanada, I've got to tell you that Bingeworthy is a part of the Playlist Podcast Network, which includes the Playlist Podcast, The Discourse, Deep Focus, and more. We can be heard on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you find your favorite shows. Follow, subscribe, drop us a rating, any of those, as we greatly appreciate it. Or just head on over to theplaylist.net for film and TV news, interviews, reviews, and more. As a reminder to our listeners, the first half of the series is available to stream on Hulu, with new episodes dropping on Tuesdays through April 23rd. Okay, here is my Shogun chat with writer-showrunners Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo, followed by my interview with the great Hiroyuki Sanada. All right, Mike D'Angelo with the Playlist. Justin, Rachel, thank you for the time today. I watched all of Shogun, and it is ridiculously good, and I'm so sad that it's over and I have no more to watch. So thank you, congratulations, and damn you at the same time. So yeah, all of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, so I guess where I want to start is why Shogun specifically. I went in clean myself, not knowing anything, not really having ever read the book or seen the 1980 miniseries. What was your relationship to it, and where did you see room for maybe reinvention or reinterpretation?
Yeah. I mean, that's really the big question that we started with and we're really asking every single day over the last 5 years, because I think it's important to keep coming back to that question, or at least the you know, provisional answer that we had found for it. You know, and it started, speaking for myself, and I guess both of us generationally, you know, this was a book that I remember as being, you know, on everyone's parents' nightstand. It was not a book I had read myself before this process began. I was unfamiliar with it in terms of the core text. What I was familiar with was the silhouette on the cover of this book, you know, and it was a silhouette of a guy who looks a lot like someone like me, you know, wearing clothes belonging to a culture that wasn't his. And I was, you know, kind of pretty troubled by that silhouette on, I guess, on two levels. You know, on one, there's the representation level and what that might mean today, which is maybe something that I can't speak to quite as much. What I can speak to as an audience member who, you know, is being asked to invest 10 hours to watch a show, it felt like it's like I've seen that movie before. And mostly in large part due to the outsized silhouette of the book, or the legacy of the book, that, you know, there have been so many movies, television shows, stories in a variety of different genres, the period piece, the Western, the science fiction, whatever it is, that have been taken from Shogun over the years. And so that Stranger in a Strange Land story is just very familiar. And I think as writers, we are always looking for new cliches. And were there really any new cliches to create in a world like this? You know, what I found as we opened it up was actually it's an amazing story of where Clavel himself was asking these questions. And, you know, about how do we encounter other cultures? How do we encounter ourselves within these cultures? And it was actually remarkably modern and worth telling because of the places he took these characters, which were very unexpected. So, you know, we felt like it was, yeah, worth bringing back.
I believe the other one wasn't in Japanese, correct? The other adaptation?
The miniseries. Yeah. It was, it's not something we've really encountered ourselves, you know, in full depth, but I'm from my understanding, it was not subtitled. It was Japanese, but there was some kind of a narration or...
Right.
You know, the story, you know, was limited because of that.
I think that it was meant to be limited to Blackthorne's point of view. Mm,
exactly.
And the inverse of that, which is, I believe, what the question you're going to ask.
Yeah, I mean, I was just kind of thinking about like the recent kind of boom of like Narcos and Tokyo Vice and these other productions that have kind of paved the way as far as like these big North American productions that have been successful foreign language adaptations. And the path to making that these days, I'm sure, is still like kind of rife with pushback. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering like where that kind of was met within the pitching of this. Did anybody say, you know, I don't know that we can do this?
Well, I will say, before you get to the degrees of pushback, it's rife with pushback for a good reason. It is, and now we know why. It is incredibly difficult work. And it's very, very, very layered and nuanced. And you have to go whole hog. Like, you need to go at it fully if you're gonna do it.
Yeah, it was, and we didn't quite know how far we'd have to go to kind of get subtitles right on a show like this. What, you know, where we began from, it was simple. One is that there was, I wouldn't call it pushback from FX. I would say that FX wanted to make sure, if we're going to do this, that we, you know, kind of come to terms with it on its own level, realize what we're getting into. Mm-hmm. I think everyone agreed that the only way to tell this story properly, and it's as the novel was told, is to tell it from, you know, a full variety of its points of view, which meant that in a story that is in some ways fundamentally about the act of translation, you have to be able to tell it in two different languages. It wouldn't work any other way. And they were supportive of that. It was also, you know, as producer and my desire to be able to get the best, coolest cast possible and not to limit our casting options simply to actors who also happen to be able to speak English, but to be able to sort of go to Japan with our casting to bring over actors, many of whom had never worked in the Hollywood system before, meant that we had to have a willingness to tell this story in their language, where they can act in their language, think in their language, and use their language to bring us closer to their inner lives as characters. So that just meant it had to be subtitled. What Rachel alludes to when it came to the difficulty of it was, you know, we don't speak Japanese. We wrote this show as a writer's room in English, sent it away to be translated into Japanese, then found when working with our producer and star, Hiroyuki Sanada, and our producer, Eriko Miyagawa, that that was only the first step, because that Japanese that had been translated to is simply a sort of a matter of fact of the translation. It's not a performed Japanese. It's not a jidaigeki Japanese, a period Japanese with a hint of modern flair that actors could take and wrap their arms around and then be able to act. So we had to send it to a Japanese playwright who specialized in jidaigeki, Kyoko Moriaki, who would take that dialogue and kind of add the more the poetry, if you will, within Japanese. Then Hiro and Eriko would be adjusting it. No, that's not quite exactly what you know the creators intended, and it should be like that, or it should be like that. And we're taking this entirely on faith because we don't speak the language. Mm-hmm. And then the actors add their flair, you know, when they perform it.
And then you would think from that point, we're good, right? We did it.
Yeah.
what a task. However, thankfully, I didn't know how in-depth this would be. What ended up happening was afterwards in post, we had a long process in which our producer, Eriko Miyagawa, along with our Japanese editor, they retranslated what was spoken back into English so that we could not just put the subtitle that was from the scripted dialogue. It was actually what the actors chose to say through their performance. And so we worked really hard to close that gap between what was actually performed and what readers would, or viewers would read, in order to make that as close as possible.
You know, and by and large, it's very often the same, right? Because we're working through this process, hoping that it's being, you know, translated as we intended it to be. But then there are certain cases where just the inflection changes or the subtle meaning of the line shifts because it's been translated into Japanese and reperformed. And we felt like, where normally when I grew up on foreign films, the subtitles are not always keyed in with the moment of the performance, we could adjust the phrasing of these lines so that that exact word hits when her face turns in that exact moment. And now suddenly the words sort of make things come alive.
I'm laughing because I feel like we should put a disclaimer on the screen. Anybody who wants to ask other questions, don't ask about our subtitles.
Because we just go on about the subtitling process. Which is not to mention even the design element of the subtitle.
Oh, yeah.
We wanted to sort of change the position on screen to bring the eye closer to where the actor's face is instead of having to dive down to the bottom. My hope is to say to our audience that if you invest 10 hours in this show in the way that we believe it deserves, we're going to give you an experience of watching something in a foreign language that is unlike anything you've seen before.
Yeah. And that's just one layer of it. You know, you just hit on that, but then there's like, hey, we got to remake 1600s Japan and you know, all these other things that you're like, well, it might be hard, but you know, and then you get into it and you're like, oh my God. So we have to remake 1600s Japan. What would you say is like the hardest part of that you didn't anticipate?
Gosh, I mean, you know, where to begin? I would say that, you know, I'll like to share, you know, because every department, from the art department, costumes, hair, makeup, you know, they did such an incredible job, not just absorbing a culture that, you know, we had to adapt from Japan, bringing to British Columbia, but also still, you know, we can't deny our gaze as Westerners creating this story, right? You know, it's impossible to fully erase. So everyone will still be able to put a touch of their own artistic point of view into it. I think of Carlos Rosario, our costume designer, who researched so meticulously, who would speak to Madame Kurosawa herself, Akira Kurosawa's daughter, who's a preeminent costumer in Japan, you know, to ask her these questions of what does this mean and how do we get this and what is this? And then still to have the confidence after spending spending so much time researching to still be able to lend a little bit of a, I think that Yabushige should go around in that black swan Jimbaori that he wears, you know, because I understand what we're being told by our Japanese collaborators that they add a little rock star flair sometimes. You can have a little fun with that. And so there we go. And we're able to sort of play around, you know, but that only comes because the research is what frees us.
I was just going to say this was only possible because department heads like Carlos Rosario did so much research. I mean, have you ever been to a costume department in which the designer has just as many books as he does fabrics? You know, like it is, it was intense.
Yeah. And so that, you know, it was hard, but it's like when you do the work, then it also becomes easy. And that was and what fun. You see again and again in our sets and our costumes is just, you know, how much that experience would blossom into a form of the show that was so specific and felt like it was both ours and also hopefully something that is rendering a version of authenticity for 1600 Japan.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
I'm very uneducated on 1600 Japan, but it felt very authentic and it felt like you were there. So mission accomplished for at least my uneducated eyes. But
okay, well, we still always like see the mistakes and see this and that, but it's like, you know, what we hope to achieve with this show, like any Hollywood production, is that we're just making better and better mistakes as time goes on.
There you go. All I can say is when it was done, I really, really wanted to see more of these characters, of this world. But I know like the book itself, it's very self-contained. Yeah. There's not really a lot of follow-up as far as like source material goes with these characters. And this was kind of listed as a limited series. So is there absolutely no more like, maybe we'll do this as an anthology where we do different stories, or maybe it's just like, not so much.
It's just hard to know what we do. I mean, the story is a close-ended story, like you say, and James Clavell ends it really beautifully, and we're very loyal to that ending. Beautifully, because it's for a story like this, where you think it's going to land and kind of flourish, it's actually like a really beautifully ambiguous ending that he chooses. And we were really true to that because we were really moved by it. It's hard without that roadmap. I don't know where we go. It was also hard because it's a 5-year production. You know, we have children younger than this show, you know, and it was a lot to sort of get to where we are. And I'm not sure there's something that's necessarily something we could reproduce again and again, especially without the sort of map laid out for us by this master storyteller.
With that said, I will quote one of our leads, Cosmo Jarvis, who plays John Blackthorne. Yep. The other night he said that he hopes the show will be a catalyst to spark audiences' interest in Japanese history, because there's a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of it, is like, if I can say, I mean, just so many great stories from this period, also written by Japanese authors that would love to see. And I would love to see Japanese filmmakers take on those stories. And, you know, if a story like this made by people like us can open the doors for Americans to be even more interested in it, then, you know, that's great.
And tell their stories.
Yeah. Because we grew up on, you know, I mean, for me, like I grew up on Kurosawa's Jidaigeki, you know, it's part of the, you know, grouping that made me want to make movies to begin with. And so hopefully this can become kind of a gateway drug.
Absolutely. Mission accomplished for me. Justin, I know you also have a story by credit on Top Gun Maverick. It was one of my favorite movies that year. It's one of the most significant blockbusters in recent times. I just kind of wanted to chop in a quick question on what that experience was like for you, working with Tom Cruise and company, you know, watching that movie do what it did.
I was, you know, it was kind of a crazy process, because obviously the feature writer's experience is very different from what it is in television, where we're, you know, kind of entrusted with the responsibility of seeing it to the end, you know, and I am always a guest in someone else's living room as a feature goes. In that case, it was, and that speaks to the length of development process for Top Gun Maverick. I mean, still a guest for 2.5 years on that film, you know, but it's what's craziest is, you know, we were up in Vancouver shooting Shogun when Top Gun Maverick premiered. I think I was a full 11 years older than when I actually worked on that movie. You know, it's just is crazy. And obviously I still speak with the producers and the various filmmakers and also the other writers who came before and after me. So it was kind of a wild and yes, satisfying thing to see how the movie came out. I mean, because it was really shepherded by a lot of people after me, from filmmakers to writers. But to have my little small piece of it, it's fun to see those little things. It's like, oh, I remember that. But it kind of feels like, you know, you have a child and you raised it for a couple of years, and then it like suddenly it's knocking on your door after it came back from college, and here it is. And it's like, you know, so I'm a little proud of those things, but I'm also proud of the other parents who were part of it too.
Of course. Well, like I said, it is a phenomenal piece of work, both Top Gun and Shogun here. I've watched all the episodes again. It is well worth your time. I very much appreciate it. For our listeners, the first two episodes of FX's Shogun premieres on February 27th on Hulu and FX. Again, truly outstanding stuff. Justin, Rachel, thanks again for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Hero, it is an absolute honor and a pleasure to speak with you, man. I am a big fan.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. So just came from my last interview with Justin and Rachel. They had nothing but glowing, amazing things to say about you and their experience Ooh. With you. And this show, man, like I watched the whole thing front to back, loved every minute of it. Congratulations on just an epic story and one that really rings authentic, at least in, you know, my uneducated eyes. But let's start from the beginning when it comes to you. How did this role of Toranaga come to you? And maybe was there any hesitation before agreeing to it or provisions to meet?
Yeah. When I got the offer for Toranaga role, maybe 7-8 years ago.
That's that long ago. Wow.
I thought about why now? Why I play this role now, making this project now. Then I thought about the model of Toranaga, the real Shogun Ieyasu Tokugawa. He's a hero because he stopped the war period and then created the peaceful era for about 260 years until we opened the country to the world. That's why he became a hero. And I thought, especially for now, we need that kind of hero. So that was the biggest motivation to take this role. And the story itself telling that too. So it's a great message to the world.
It is an amazing, amazing story. I understand though, like I watched all of it and I was like, man, that was amazing. And I started to research the book and the, you know, the 1980 series. And I understand that the original adaptation in 1980 wasn't really beloved in Japan like it was in the US. So what was your relationship to the story before coming on? And then what were kind of the things that you were like, maybe we should change this?
Yeah, we talked a lot before start. Create the script with Justin and Rachel. And original one is most likely watching Japanese culture through the Blackthorn's blue eyes. But this time, let's put more Japanese lenses in the script and then showing more detail for each characters means it's going to be a great human drama, you know. So that was intention at the beginning. And the novel is inspired by true event or characters. But story itself, fictional entertainment. That's why we needed to make authentic as much as possible to make story and characters believable. Mm-hmm. That's why it was very important. Luckily, we could hire Japanese crew with experts for samurai movies and TVs for each department. Wig, costume, props, master of gestures, and tea ceremony master, blah, blah, blah. So we had a great team to create authentic samurai drama in Hollywood.
it's an amazing experience. Just visually, the language is so like complex and detailed as well. I understand that you had a hand in that as well. Like Justin and Rachel would basically kind of write the script in English and then, you know, it would get translated. And then you would look at it and you'd be like, well, let's, maybe this is more authentic and stuff like that. So can you talk, is that like kind of the reason you came on as an executive producer? Cause you're like, well, we need to kind of keep a hand on the wheel here.
Yeah, it was a great experience. And then I could, you know, involve to the creation from the beginning.
Yeah.
So Justin sent me as soon as the first draft came out in English, then sent me, and then I take a notes and then try to avoid a stereotypical thing or westernized thing or modernize movement or something, and then sent them note. And then second draft going to the translator and then going to the historical professor and then going to the drama scenario writer, then come back to us and then take the notes, then retranslate to English and then send back to Justin. So, so many back and forth we've done for each script, for each episode. It was a great process to make authentic.
Yeah, you were writing a script via the game of telephone, basically, in different languages.
Yeah.
And Torunaga himself, he's like so complex and mysterious and smart, but he's very internal, which makes the performance, I bet, a little bit tricky as far as what to properly convey and how much you want to give away. So what was the key when you were looking at the scripts to unlocking Torunaga for you?
Yeah, try to make simple. Mm. And then he's a mysterious guy and a strategist, patient, and not only powerful. So very complicated character. But inside is dramatically moving, but don't show to the audience at all. And then, yeah, that's the way to survive for him.
Pretty much, so, yeah. He's got to keep it all in.
Yeah. But I really enjoyed to play that role. Before I'm in front of the camera, I prepare everything, you know, other actors' movement and props, decoration. So when I start acting, I can concentrate to my job, you know, and no worry about anything and just enjoy. I felt like a freedom, relax, just be there as a character and then react to others. That's it. Simple and deep. That was my way this time.
One of the, you kind of touched on it earlier, but one of the themes that this tackles is the very big differences between Western and Eastern outlooks on things like tradition and honor, which are very different even today. I guess I was going to kind of ask what you felt, because I'm so separated from Japan. I'm fascinated by both the modern and like the history of it. But I wonder how it feels to you. Does that ring true even today? Or are there a lot of things that we've kind of bridged as far as the gap between us?
I think nowadays, I don't feel much difference. And then, mm-hmm. you know, the Japanese young generation loves, you know, Western culture and pops, of course, movies, fashion, everything. And then we can research everything on computer now. So, yeah, that's why we need to make authentic in a classic mm-hmm. way. And yeah. not modernize, not westernize, just be historical way. But still, we need to, you know, adjust a little bit to easy to understand for the foreigners. But don't too much. So mm-hmm. we try to make a good balance between, you know, historical and easy to understand. That's happening all the time on set. But I really enjoyed that process.
Yeah. I also really love the little kind of like prequel almost bit that you did in Mortal Kombat to open the film. I know you're coming back for the sequel. What can you kind of tease about your return as Scorpion?
Yeah, I already finished shooting Mortal Kombat 2. Well, this time, yeah, most of the characters from the first one came back, and plus few big new roles in there. So yeah, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah. So you're kind of mixing it up, not in the period, but in the modern kind of like action of it all.
Yeah. That was a good experience, you know, the beginning, historical costume and dialogue. And at the end, maybe like a future figure coming out, suddenly speaking English. It was fun. It was a fun experience in the one movie, you know.
Yeah.
Could show both sides. So maybe I could use all my experience into the film.
I also spoke with Chad Stahelski about John Wick 4 late last year because it was one of my top movies of 2023. I loved the part in Japan with your Continental.
Thank you.
Yeah, he said that role was literally written for you. So how does it feel for, you know, big directors even today to be like, I mean, you've reached the status where you're kind of like a legendary actor that people are writing specific parts for with you in mind. How does that feel to have directors do that?
Yeah, I worked with him before for the Wolverine, a short term, but that was our first working with him. And then after that, you know, we worked together, the team, his team and I working a lot. So we had a connection, but this time he called me that and said, I wrote the role for you. And then it's a long friend of Keanu. And I worked with Keanu 10 years ago for the 47 Ronin. So, you know, I thought, oh, it's going to be a great reunion. And then we can use our chemistry or history of us just, you know, put into John Wick 4. So without the word, we can create the atmosphere as a long fan knowing each other like that. So it was happy moment for me. Yeah, he created that kind of role for me.
Right.
So I've done my best for him.
Yeah. It was an outstanding little cameo that you did there, and a really cool world. Just the lighting of those sets, you know, talk about going from, you know, 1600s Japan, but this is also like the neon lights of John Wick. That's insane as well. But they're giving me the wrap. I just want to thank you for your time. Like I said, I'm a huge fan going all the way back. So just I will say that this is probably my favorite thing you've ever done, Shogun. And I can't wait to see what you do next. I'm always going to show up.
Thank you so much.